Welcome to the Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast. I'm your co-host, Bob Zarrell.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
With me, as always, is professional film critic Sean Patrick.
I am the smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-T.
And Josh Adams.
My wife. She is pain in my asshole.
Visit us at IHateCritics.net, everyone'sacriticpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Critics Pod is our handle at Instagram and Twitter. Follow us there for the trailers, interaction, the podcast, Sean's reviews, the 30-year-old movies are there. Whatever else is there. I'm drawing a blank right now. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, all your podcatchers. Subscribe to the show, rate and review the show. It helps us move up the charts. And Patreon, ihatecritics.net/Patreon is the best way to help support the podcast. You can also go to ihatecritics.net and click on the PayPal link if you'd rather contribute that way. And then there's also our podcast merch through TeePublic at ihatecritics.net. And the podcast merch tab. It's the Oscars right now as we're recording, and we're not watching it. I think combined, I don't know what Josh has watched yet. Have you seen any of it yet?
Oh, no, I didn't plan to either.
We've seen about a combined 30 seconds of it. That's only because I had to bring my wife Thin Mints in the middle of it. She's watching it.
Are those vegan approved?
Yes. That's the only Girl Scout cookie that's vegan approved. Apparently. Unless you're a vegan listening and that's not true, please tell me because it was her idea, not mine.
Well, I just figured I thought it would be covered with milk chocolate or something, but I guess not.
Apparently not, yeah. I would have thought the same thing. That's my least favorite of the Girl Scout cookies anyway. So
I like it. So if it's vegan, that means it's healthier, right?
No.
So eating two sleeves of it is quite okay.
No.
Damn.
When I was the only one in my family vegan, that was when I lost all the weight. Once my family started, I've been plateauing ever since.
Aha.
Vegan does not mean healthier. Let's jump right to our trailers then. We'll start with Palms because the other three are somewhat related, I guess. They're all in the music industry. But Palms, that was not me trolling Sean. Sean posted this himself.
Yeah, why did I do that? This movie looks awful. This looks like absolute utter torture. An old lady cheerleading team led by Diane Keaton. Oh, she's just become the worst. It's like she's like she looks at Gerard Butler's career and goes, I can top that. Hold my beer.
I feel like just from watching the trailer that I need to go to Target and hang out for a while. It just has that vibe of inauthenticity, and it just rubs me the wrong way. Even like the font titles, you know, the font in the titles, it just kind of, and that's topical for us this week, of course, but it just doesn't look right. I expected a Myers to be involved with the film at some point, just from watching it. It could be fun, and I hate to... It's not the age group I'm ripping on. It's the movie style that this type of cast does that I'm ripping on. That's all.
But it's got its old person audience. I mean, I could see my mom and her friends liking shit like this. And just like I can see my brother-in-law liking a Gerard Butler movie or my other brother-in-law liking an Adam Sandler movie. So, I mean...
And this is why Bob doesn't talk to his family.
Notice I said in-law. Although my mom would, she's, you know, you just kind of, you can accept that, you understand it. But to me, it's a movie that we shouldn't have to deal with. But we do anyway. So
That's weird, because I'll make the discussion point later about why would I care about a particular movie, but it's for everyone. I don't necessarily buy into the idea of made for a specific audience, so we shouldn't pay attention to it. I would like a movie to be good, or at least have something to watch, somebody that's energetic on screen, or something that you gravitate towards. In this case, I see nothing of interest or value.
What I mean by that is it's not made for critics at all. There's no way that critics are going to like this movie, so why do the critics have to see it? Why even review it? In fact, if I were the one marketing it, I would put every bad review the critics put as part of the campaign, because that's the audience you're going to get to the theater. But I mean, I understand your point. Yeah. I'm just more talking on
this type of thing. Just feels so insultingly market tested. Like, you know, somebody came up with a premise, and then they came up with a couple ideas for people to be in it, and they pitched that, and oh yeah, okay, all right, here, grab some guy off the street and have him write a script.
Yeah.
Down to the font.
Just think of all the writers that got paid for rewrites on this thing.
At least something good came out of this. Somebody made a car payment. That's good.
It was good to see Rhea Perlman again, though. I haven't seen her in
years. Yeah, I'm glad that you said that, because I did a double take and then thought, that is Rhea Perlman. Man, it's been like over a decade.
I might see this just for her. I don't know, I won't. But
towards the end of the trailer, I was drifting and wondering about some sort of weird Cheers reunion that I could make that would be interesting compared to this. You know, stuff that I would actually want to see her in.
All right, then there's Rocket Man.
Rocket Man, the Elton John movie, starring Taron Egerton and Jamie Bell. Jamie Bell playing Bernie Taupin, which I didn't know before this trailer, which is kind of cool. You know, it's got some elements that look kind of typical, and it's got some elements that look kind of stagey, like kind of a stage play idea, which is interesting at the very least. It's different than something like Bohemian Rhapsody. You know, they're definitely adding fantastical elements to it that I think at least set it apart from other biopics, so that's nice.
I didn't like this trailer either, as well as the first trailer. It's not just Taron Egerton this time. That was my argument the first time. It just, I think I let your voice into my ear, Sean, as I was watching this one, that in discussing biopics, if the person is still alive, you don't have the time to sit back and reflect, and that started to make sense with this one. It's not Rocket Man's fault that Bohemian Rhapsody is a recent release, or that anything, for that matter, is a recent release musically, or that there's a trailer that we're going to talk about in a minute that has to do with people that are still alive. But it feels like it's just on the bandwagon of musical films, and that it doesn't really have anything to say other than collecting our cash. That's all that I get from the trailer, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I guess I'm somewhere in between. I definitely see that part of it, but I do think the fantastical elements that are added may allow it to set itself apart, but at the same time, I just have a problem with, as much as I like these rock biopics, is covering all this time in a 2-hour, 3-hour movie. Is you have to fly through things, and then you have to change, you know, and I understand it's not a big deal to change the truth and what really happened, but it is kind of annoying. You know, the further I get away from the Queen movie, not just because it was nominated for an Oscar and it shouldn't have been, but I mean, they do stuff way out of order, and that we even talked about it on the show, even though I liked it, that does kind of annoy me. And it's going to happen. Even Straight Outta Compton was another one that just kind of flew through things. It's a good movie, but it still just flew through a lot. And I don't know how you do that without. So, I don't know. And, you know, using Tiny Dancer in the trailer doesn't help when there's a far better movie that used it. You know, I mean, you're not going to top it. So, why even put it in the movie? I don't know. While we're talking about true biopics, The Dirt, Motley Crue, Netflix.
Who is this guy playing Vince Neil, and why doesn't he look anything like Vince Neil?
I didn't recognize any of the cast.
I only know the drummer is Machine Gun Kelly. I don't even really know much about who that guy is. Okay. I just know the name. I don't really know who he is. He plays Tommy Lee. Again, you're going to try to, one, you got a biography that's just strictly about glorifying sex and drugs and rock and roll. I mean, they did a little bit of bad mouth in the drugs, I guess, because one of them dies, but and one of them kills another guy from being dirt. But anyway, I don't know. I like Motley Crue okay, but I don't need to see movies about bands I like. I don't know. I don't want to see a Led Zeppelin movie. I don't want to see an Aerosmith movie. I don't know.
I'm sure it's coming, though. Something along those lines is coming. The trailer's okay. I felt, at least in terms of musical trailers this week, I might take that one over the Rocket Man one. But I don't know enough about Motley Crue to verify whether or not this is going to be a satisfying film. I'm the kind of guy that's like, yeah, Motley Crue's greatest hits. I've got right. that. And I guess I delve a little bit more into Poison than them, but I watched School of Rock this week. It was just last night, actually, for the first time.
Fantastic,
and
isn't it?
I loved the movie, okay? And it got me into the mode of, I definitely want to listen to a lot of 70s and 80s rock right now. That's what I was listening to on the drive here, etc.
Josh is one of the kids in class who are like, Motorhead? Black Sabbath?
I'm the uncool guy on the piano. Who's maybe made cool at the end. Maybe. But I don't know. The Motley Crue movie, I think I do want to see it because I like the music enough. But we'll see how it does with the same subjects that you're talking about. You know, is it going to blow through everything? Or is it going to be honest?
I mean, well, the book was pretty honest.
Oh, it'll be honest.
So there is that. But, I mean, if it's like if there's a lot of performance clips and it's just, I mean, I'll just listen to the greatest hits. I mean, which is why I hate Bohemian Rhapsody so much, is that you can get the same effect watching Bohemian Rhapsody as you could listening to the soundtrack. It's way better. It's way better if you listen to the soundtrack instead of watching the shitty movie.
I mean, I did like the behind the scenes stuff, even though they weren't in depth. I mean, it was just kind of the stick it to the man bullshit that you see in every other movie, but I still enjoyed that in Bohemian Rhapsody, even if it wasn't true. But I'm sure this will be more honest than that. Obviously, it's not going to get nominated for an Oscar because Motley Crue's not Queen. But I'll see it. I guess I'm kind of looking forward to it because, again, I'm not like I like Motley Crue, but I'm maybe slightly more than Josh does. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of their records, but I'm not that invested to the point where it's going to ruin anything for me.
Have you read the book?
Yeah.
And was it good?
Yes. Here's the thing is there's this book called Walk This Way, and then The Dirt came out a little while later. Obviously, Walk This Way is about Aerosmith, who was basically Motley Crue in the 70s, if not more so. The only difference is they didn't kill anybody. So that's kind of I don't know. I would say the Aerosmith one's better, but I'm also biased. So, but I mean, that all said, I'll take every other rock biography to those because they're more glorifying the, I shouldn't say glorifying because they're really not, but they're definitely like, look at us, look what we did and got away with kind of thing. And there are other ones, every other rock bio I've read has been more, it's had a point and a purpose to it, and it's usually trying to avoid those stupid stories about what they did when they were drunk, and I kind of appreciate that more than the drunk book, but I mean, there is murder and death in this, so I guess. And they didn't go to jail.
You said stick it to the man, and that made me think of School of Rock. The kids have stick it to the manitis or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
And then there's Her Smell.
Yes, this is a interesting indie flick. I'm not sure what this it seems like an original story, although maybe a little touch of Courtney Love in there. But really interesting trailer. Elizabeth Moss is the star from Mad Men, and she's a brilliant actress. And I've loved just about everything that she's done. She makes really smart choices, and this looks fascinating.
I'm with you on that one. I was thinking this is definitely the best of the musical trailers this week. and I've also liked everything, at least her, in every film that she's been in. I've liked her, and even the few episodes of Mad Men that I was able to somehow choke through. It's not my material, but I liked her in it. In The West Wing, I liked her, too. The One I Love movie, you know, she sticks with me a little bit. So her in in music and this trying to separate the persona of the singer and the lead versus a person that's a mom. It's a very effective trailer. So yeah, I'll see it. The title's a little strange. I'm not sure what that's all about. Maybe that's the name of the band. Maybe there's something to that, but it was a little off-putting.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that. I'm sure there is something to the. We'll probably figure it out when we see it. This is my favorite of the four trailers this week. I think the fact that it's not about anybody particular, as far as I could tell. I mean, the stupid me complaining about the two biopics, like, he'd be perfect for Courtney Love. But I don't want to see that movie. I want to see this. This looks more into my wheelhouse. And, you know, you mentioned a movie like School of Rock or A Star is Born, where I like those movies better because they have more freedom to do what they want and not have to follow some narrative. You can just make your own original story with the point you're trying to make. And this one looks good, and I'll definitely be seeing it when I can. All right. We just have two new movies this week. Is that correct?
Yeah.
All right. Let's start with the dragon movies, plural. We'll talk about all of them, but what came out this week?
How to Train Your Dragon 3, The Hidden World.
Okay.
And this is the continuation, of course, of the stories from the first two movies with the lead character, Hiccup, voiced by Jay Baruchel, as the leader of his country of, what is it?
Burke,
thank you. He's got his dragon toothless, and together they're freeing dragons and taking them back to Burke. But Burke is now overrun by dragons, and it's caught the attention of a dragon hunter by the name of Grimmel the Grizzly, voiced by F. Murray Abraham, the Academy Award winner. And he's going to kill Toothless, because he's killed a bunch of Night Furies in his career, and that's what he likes to do, and capture the rest of the dragons and give them the bad guys who are going to start their own dragon army. Yeah, there's the story, and then, of course, they're going to try and find what they call the Hidden World, which is this supposedly mythic place where dragons live together in harmony and away from humanity. This is a good movie. You know, the other two are good movies. I think this is maybe the best of the three for me. It's the most mature. It's the one I think that has the it's more clever. It's funnier. I think an improvement. Like I said, I like the other ones. I admire them, I guess, but I like this one more. It's just the animation is better. The characters are a little bit beefed up, and the humor is a little bit stronger.
I was saying earlier, a film that series or a film in general that I shouldn't necessarily like or shouldn't be aimed towards me whatsoever, this being the case, I still absolutely love this series. Rewatching the first two this week reminded me even more so how deeply I really care about these movies. I'd call it the best animated trilogy of all time if Toy Story films didn't exist.
Thank God they made four of them.
Yeah, right. I'm sure it'll ruin its entire legacy. You know? But, I mean, that still stands up high as the right. Best of a series of animated films. But this one, to me, is the just ever so slightly the weakest of all of them. And there's no real clear reason as to why that is. I guess I just really appreciated the other two more. Maybe because of their slight newness. Maybe because I saw the second one in a drive-in, and it was my first drive-in experience in over 20-plus years. Whatever the case may be, I just didn't feel as deeply for this as the others. I will agree with you on the animation. This one has some particularly awesome scenes, and I saw it in 3D on purpose. The other two in 3D are just magnificent. They have a really great depth of rendering for a 3D image. The water scenes, the flight scenes where you're through the perspective of Toothless, is really unheard of to me. It reminds me a little bit of a lesser-known film that not many people saw, and I hope you don't hate it, but at least you accept it. It was Legend of the Guardians, the Zack Snyder animated film about owls. Okay,
not a fan. Yep.
I knew it. But when I rented it, I rented it in 3D so that I could see like what kind of animation it was, and that was flight of the owls sometimes. You know, I like that a lot. It makes you feel more a part of the film, and I can imagine that for kids, especially kids that are younger than mine, might really like the idea of being immersed into a film like that. But in terms of the story, the only part that it really, really moved me was about the last 5 to 10 minutes. The story of Toothless and Hiccup comes to an arc where something needs to take place, and the decision that the film makes is, as you said earlier, it's a mature decision, and it reminded me of what you guys talked about when Ralph Breaks the Internet came out, and these stronger messages for kids in that particular movie. It was about being there for somebody else and having the mature decision to support somebody, even if it isn't what you want to do and if it's in a different path. And this is along those same lines. It teaches kids about letting go, perhaps, or letting somebody grow where they need to. So in terms of an adult satisfaction level, I loved how beautiful it was and how at least it wasn't a terrible conclusion to a trilogy. But I definitely felt like there could have been just a little bit more. That the villain is fine. He's intelligent, bright, etc., etc. But I don't know. There was just something a little off about that performance. I like it. I just don't love it.
So my wife went on a girls' weekend this weekend, and I was going to take the kids to go see this. And as I'm driving to the theater, oh, by the way, don't take the kids to see How to Train Your Dragon. My mom wants to take them tomorrow. Oh. And I was like, well, I'm on my way now. He'll just watch it again. I mean, it was really just my son. He watches the cartoon. He's probably seen the seasons of both whatever are on Netflix 3 or 4 times a piece. We've rented How to Train Your Dragons 2 on Amazon. He somehow managed to watch that 3 times in 48 hours. To the point where he wants to watch it again. It's like, sorry, the rental ran up. So I'm like, well, let's just watch it again. Who cares? And she would not let me go. So we went and saw another movie. I took a 7-year-old too. We'll get there in a bit. So I didn't actually get to see this, which kind of... Well, we were going to go again today, because I was going to be the one to take him. But he was so bad, I was just like, well, I can't give you a present for being a dick all day long. So I did not get to see it. I did, however, watch the first two. I had never seen the second, and I saw the first in the theater. And I think what I like so much about the first is it just kind of caught me off guard. Similar to what Josh said, it's not really... It's not Pixar, and it's not really a movie I was thinking much about. And then when I saw it, I was like, wow, this is actually really, really good. And then watching the second one this weekend, the same kind of thing. You know, instead of the typical Disney thing where they kill a parent early on, they kill a parent at the end. And I thought that was a little bit more mature than, you know, what it could have been. You know, I think all three of these movies are pretty mature, it sounds like. I haven't seen the third one, obviously. But... That said, I mean, I ended up not liking it as much as I did the first time around, but I still liked it a lot.
What we usually think about when it comes to films that hit us the most as adults is development of characters, or it's just cool and we like it, you know? Mm-hmm. But usually animated films don't have the runtime to really develop some of the characters that are introduced on screen. It's usually move on to the next joke. At least the trailers I saw before this movie were all films that looked like I'd rather stab myself in the ear with an ice pick than watch them because of how hyperactive they just can't wait to be.
Angry Birds 2, Ugly Dolls.
Yes. Stop, basically. Palms. And then the pandering of a dog's journey.
God.
Come on, man. It's just... But, you know, this one earns all of these emotional moments. And that is the part that's rare. That's the part that really gets me involved and invested in these characters. Why would I normally care about a movie where Jay Baruchel and Jonah Hill are providing voices? But in this case, no, I like... all of it. It earns all of the laughs and all of the tears.
What Dean DeBlois does really well is efficiency and economics of jokes, because he doesn't let anything linger too long. Even like the Jonah Hill runner about him hitting on Cate Blanchett, he doesn't let it linger too long. The jokes pop in and are out very quickly. You know, the same thing with you've got to really not use those two twin characters too often, and he does a good job of not overusing them in this movie. So I appreciated that about the humor of the movie, because he's got a big, sweeping story to tell. Chris, there's this wonderful scene of the romance between Toothless and the White Dragon, the Light Fury, where he's trying to he's performing a mating dance to try and entice her. And it's this wonderful little pantomime scene that's kind of almost a throwback to silent film. It's lovely. And of course, John Powell did the soundtrack for this movie again, and he's incredible. He did the Bourne movies, and he's done all three of these movies, and he's still got that wonderful Scottish inflection in the music, and it really works. Very sweeping.
So what's your favorite of the three then, Josh?
I decided two. More epic in scale, and it was a bit more adventurous in the air, and I don't know, everything just seemed to fit. In the death of the parent thing, you mentioned that, but I was like, you know what? The whole movie, they're discussing the relationship between the father and the son and the decisions made, and really what it comes down to is the father, like, really just wants to do the right thing. And I feel like this whole trilogy earns all of its marks.
No, and I'm glad. Like, I'm not really not bothered that my son likes, you know, watch this over and over again. I mean, obviously, he should not be in front of the TV as much as he is. But, like, this is something, you know, it's better than, you know, Secret Life of Pets or something. Or Peter.
That's another. That's one of the
Which he didn't really watch that one, too. This is the one he's really latched on to more than anything else. Like, he watched Peter Rabbit a lot, but not like this.
Yeah.
He did that for, like, a week. And then this has been ongoing since. I don't even know. I can't remember when it wasn't this, to be honest with you.
That's excellent.
Points to DreamWorks as well for capping this thing, being willing to step away from a trilogy, especially one that's made a lot of money, is not something that many companies have the guts to do.
That's true, and I guess they have the ability to continue those television shows or whatnot. I think they're on Netflix, if right. I'm not mistaken. So the property can continue. And there's the potential for additional stuff if they wanted to spin off in some way. I kind of hope they don't, of course.
Didn't we think Toy Story was done after three? Or
of course.
So, I mean, it's nice to say that, but all of a sudden some people change at the top and like, all right, let's see, here's a cash cow, let's bring this back.
I thought at least with these characters, I think they're done.
Did you notice T.J. Miller voices the twin?
Does he? I don't think he does, actually.
I know Jonah Hill, Christopher Mintz-Plasse, T.J. Miller. We'll look it up really quick.
T.J. Miller is a voice in it.
Rough Nut and Tough Nut are the twins, so it's Kristen Wiig and the other one that we have yet to know.
I think that's
sure.
An unknown voice actor. Okay. Relatively unknown.
They did not list in the credits that, because I thought it was T.J. Miller, and I was thinking to myself, oh, they completely skipped over the brother twin during the main listing of the credits at the end. And I'm like, oh, gosh, that's a clear notion that they aren't wanting to credit him. But as Beth said, as we were walking out, oh, there's his name in the credits listing down. So whether he did the whole voice performance or not, I'm not sure.
What's the name of the twin?
Rough Nut and Tough Nut.
Tough Nut is Justin Ruppel.
There you have it then.
But T.J. Miller was in the other ones, wasn't he?
I thought so, yeah.
I have no memory.
I thought he was the twin. So they must have replaced him before the film, which makes sense now. It totally works.
Or he didn't want to come back. He's quitting a lot of things lately. Yep, he was Tough Nut in the prior movie.
There you have it.
And the Netflix show. Oddly enough. Fighting with My Family.
Yes, from WWE Films. The story of Paige, Soraya Knight is her real name, and she was a wrestler from the age of 12. Her parents had their very own wrestling federation in England, the WAW, and they were short on the card one night, and they needed somebody else to wrestle in the kids' section of their wrestling, and they had their daughter do it, against their son, no less, and they grew up together in the business. Cut to 6 years later, she's 18 years old, and she's being scouted by the WWE because she's just that good. Her brother is as well. But as we come to find out, he doesn't quite have what she has. And she's going to get picked up and taken to the WWE developmental training and have to go on this journey to figure out her character and who she is and where she fits in the WWE. And it's a really sanitized story. It's definitely, you know, taking a lot of... First of all, how do you make a WWE movie... a character movie and not have Vince McMahon in it anywhere. That's the first false note.
Put Vince Vaughn in it.
That was striking the first false note with me. Vince Vaughn was the other false note with me. Not that he's bad. It's just he's like an amalgam of like a dozen different guys.
But The Rock. Well, that's the thing. I mean, you can go ahead and finish, and then
The Rock thing. The Rock thing actually, the one big scene that people point to, that actually did happen. He was the one who did tell her that she was getting the title shot, which is interesting to note. It was the same time he told her that he was also going to make a movie about her. but that's not in the movie, weirdly enough.
Well, then he makes some horribly inappropriate joke. He calls...
Oh, God, yeah, that was so awkward.
Why the fuck would you not... He calls Vince Vaughn sex tape, which we should get there.
Because he makes people famous.
Paige has a sex tape that came out...
After...
So we're just like,
why would you put that joke in the movie?
And if you'd already written it, take it out.
Take it out. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it was kind of in poor taste.
Maybe it's just their one attempt at edgy humor because there's nothing else about this that's remotely edgy.
Well, I took a 7-year-old to it, and then I showed my mom, and I didn't really think anything. I kind of thought the same thing Sean was thinking, but my mom was like, "What did you take him to?" I'm like, "I just watched this trailer," and in the trailer, right off the bat, you would see the way his cock's shape, or I mean, penis, and I was like, "Oh, yeah, I took my kids to this."
Yeah, Lena Headey and Nick Frost play her parents in the movie, and they're professional wrestlers, of course, and they are absolutely hilarious. Those are really tremendously colorful characters. Lena Headey and Nick Frost are incredible together. They're so funny, and there's a great scene in this movie. Nick Frost is talking to one of his wrestlers backstage. Paige isn't even in the scene, but they're going over things that he would be willing to do in a hardcore match. And he's talking to a guy on the phone who's going to be the guy's opponent. He's like, "Would you take a trash can to the face?" Like, I don't know, let me see. No, he hits him in the face with a trash can.
Yeah, I guess it would. What about the a bowling ball to the nuts?
Great scene. Great scene. There's a couple of really great scenes in this movie. I also like there's a bit of an inversion on the story of her arriving at NXT, and that you think that she's going to be solely on this hero's journey, but she has to come to realize that she's out there against these fitness models who she thinks aren't worthy because they didn't grow up in the business, and then she's got to learn that, you know, yeah, they kind of are just as good as you. And that's kind of an inversion of what you expect of a story like this.
That was actually awesome. I actually loved that part of the movie. In a lot of ways, it reminds me of Bohemian Rhapsody. Again, it's a movie that covers a long section of time, and you just kind of have to speed through it. You make certain characters. You take like 5 characters, throw them into one. Vince Vaughn, for instance. The Rock is kind of Stone Cold and The Rock mixed. They do show pictures of Stone Cold on the back, but... because she was more of a Stone Cold guy, but they make it look like she was a big Rock person. But yeah, the whole model thing is they keep referring to him as tits and ass, and then all of a sudden it was just like, well, no, just because they're models doesn't mean they're not worthy. It was really kind of a cool, instead of pitting women up against each other, it was just kind of raising all of them up at the same time without being annoying, like eye rolling. Mm-hmm. It was actually pretty smart and cool. So, I mean, I don't know. And the weird thing, too, is the audience. It wasn't like me, Sean, and Jason Mollett. It was like old people, like 60s, late 50s.
Yeah.
And then me and my kids. And then there's somebody else and their kids. But for the most part, it was just like older people at the movie theater. And they seemed to enjoy it, too. And it's a pretty fun, safe movie that... There's nothing really wrong with it. Just if you're a big fan, you're going to be annoyed by, like Sean said, no Vince McMahon and making Vince Vaughn, you know, and Jim Ross, and maybe not even him, but like 5 different guys. But I don't know. It ended up being just a fun little movie to I mean, they really sped through a lot.
They did, like, and well, they cut out a lot of stuff too, because she was a champion in NXT, the very first NXT Women's Championship. That's not mentioned at all.
They made it look like the developmental was like a week long, or maybe 3 weeks long.
They made it. Well, they also made it seem like nobody knew who she was when she arrived on Raw. That's just not true. People like me knew exactly who that was arriving on Raw, and it was very exciting that night. But
I don't remember her freezing.
No, I don't either.
But again, it works for the story.
Sure. The interesting thing, Josh, about Paige is that her life after the end of this movie is actually far more interesting, because not only did she have the sex tape, she had a drug problem, she had an allegedly abusive relationship with another wrestler.
And a career-ending injury.
A big return, a second life in wrestling. It's pretty great.
Died in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, it's much more dramatic than what happens in this movie.
So wait for part two.
Is she still working?
Her wrestling in-ring career is over. She's been doing some other things, promotional things.
Okay.
I don't know how much longer she's going to be with the company.
Right. But, I mean, that's... we could go down that rabbit hole, too, if you want. But, yeah, I mean, it was still... It wasn't so much about her as much as it was, we have this cool little, you know, cheesy little fun story to, you know, about accomplishment that we're going to tell, and, you know, lessons learned along the way. And that's really all it is. I just used her story to tell that, you know. Yeah.
This is actually based off of a documentary that was made about her family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you guys mentioned that briefly last week. I'm not 100%.
No. You mentioned another one. But you're right. Maybe it's on YouTube right now.
Possibly.
We mentioned Beyond the Mat. That's more about the classic.
Okay. Well, as I found out this week, there's no shortage of videos about wrestling and wrestlers if you really want to dive deep, which, I mean, you know, we'll get to that. But.
I like this movie enough because it's colorful enough. It's funny enough. Everything about it is just kind of good enough.
Right. And I mean, I'll put it kind of on the same level as Bohemian. Actually, I'll say it's better than Bohemian Rhapsody. I'm not just saying that because of the Oscars and I'm mad about it. I'm really not, because Sean's right. It is, that's the greatest hits. I just really had fun watching the greatest hits, and I like the backstage stuff they did. This one at least has a story that is more, it's got a purpose with the story, and it's simple, and I mean, it could easily be a kid's cartoon. It's that simple of a movie, but it's enjoyable. My kids did like it. They wanted to stick around in the credits and watch all the stuff they were showing throughout that, and I don't know.
It's well written. It is well written. It's got, you know, good, smart complexities to it for as lightweight as it is. The relationship with her and her brother, the resentment between him and her after she gets picked and he doesn't, even though he felt that he was the better wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was well played.
And you don't have to like wrestling to like the movie. But, I mean, I think liking it's going to help make you like it more than you probably should. But it's definitely a... It's an easy watch.
Just between you and me, why do they got to rib Pete Dunne in this movie? What's that about?
Josh is taking a drink. Josh gets to play for a little bit.
I was going to wait for the appropriate amount of seconds before I asked, who's Pete Dunne, if you would illuminate me? Because I'm willing to hear these stories, you know? It's how much I grab onto it. That's all.
And here, I'll be a little honest here. I don't know who Pete Dunne is.
Oh, you don't?
But I don't want to pretend like I'm just pretending not to be a wrestling fan. And that's what I worry about. I'm coming off of.
He's the NXT British champion.
I don't watch NXT, so I'm one of the guys who didn't know who Paige was. I actually wasn't watching wrestling when she won at all, so I just kind of knew who she was later on. I'm the guy who watches all the YouTube videos but doesn't actually watch the show. My wife thinks I watch. She goes, you're obsessed with it. I'm like, cause the videos are... I don't know. I like the stuff when I was a kid, and I like them talking about it. It's,
I don't know. It's just like,
I understand that.
Right. I mean, if there were a shit ton of movie, you know, YouTube videos about Rocky IV with Stallone and everybody involved, I'd be watching that. It's that kind of.
I spent a Saturday night about a month ago watching 250 80s commercials with my wife. So don't worry. I think you're safe on this show.
And then my wife went on. She was gone last week. I had to watch, like, literally spent the entire night watching Harold and Maude, but then this YouTube show called Hot Ones, where celebrities eat hot wings and get interviewed. Each wing gets a little bit hotter, and it was just fascinating watching them deal with hot sauce.
Oh, is Will Arnett and Chris Pratt one of them?
Maybe. I didn't see those. I didn't see them do it, but I saw. I mean, like, Charlize Theron did one, and. Natalie Portman.
I have kind of a weird fascination with the YouTube shows about people eating things. I watched one today, just it was random, and I've seen it before, but I watched it again because it was so entertaining, because it's just a guy eating the world's hottest chip, like the one chip challenge.
Then you need to watch this Hot Ones show, because it's literally an interview show. It's an interview show, but you know the host is eating the hot wings like it's nothing, and then the people doing it are, you know, they're like Kevin Hart's amazing watching it because he just cannot handle spicy food. Some of them, like Jim Gaffigan, quit. He's like, I'm done. I don't know. It's if you like food YouTube shows, that's the one to go with. Speaking of rabbit holes, we just jumped down. Should we just move on to our classic then?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event for the linear, legitimate, and universally recognized, undisputed classic.
Beyond the Mat, right? Is that right? No, I actually watched that and The Wrestler. The Wrestler is our classic, but I made my wife watch Beyond the Mat.
Yeah.
And she fell asleep like right when they showed the whole Rock McFoley thing. I'm like, it's like the one thing you need to see. But again, nobody thinks even remotely real. So it's like, no, he really was taking the chair and swinging it like a baseball bat 20 times to his head. And he was handcuffed and had a concussion. And he didn't realize he was getting up over and over again. And he just kept doing it. You should see, it's pretty good, Josh. Anyway, The Wrestler.
The Wrestler.
Mickey Rourke.
Yes, Randy the Ram Robinson is a... professional wrestling legend. He's now well past his prime, working part-time at a grocery store and weekends in independent feds where they'll take him, he'll wrestle for a couple bucks. He lives in a trailer. His favorite place in the world is a strip club, and his life is poignantly sad. He's hanging in there as best he can, but you know, his glory days are well past. And it is a fascinating character to watch. And Mickey Rourke is so incredible at playing him. It is so authentic. It feels so real with him. He gets to the core of this character so beautifully. And as a wrestling fan, it's even deeper because you've seen this guy. Like, if you've seen Beyond the Matter, if you've been to an independent show, you've seen this guy. You know him. Jake Roberts was him for a long time. Like, if you watch the Jake the Snake documentary, that was...
Or Beyond the Mat.
That one, too. He's pretty much the perfect model for Randy the Ram. And he's just this self-inflicted wound over and over again. He's just been doing this in his entire life, and you're watching that sort of last cycle of himself running himself into the ground. So many amazing scenes, so intuitively played, just kind of like a great wrestling match with him and Aronofsky. If you think about it, the chemistry that they have in capturing those tiny little poignant moments where he asks the little kid to come play Nintendo with him is just such a little tiny scene, but it's so poignantly sad at the same time. It's such an incredible performance, and that ending is powerful.
And I don't know, like, Josh and I texted a little bit offline, and I don't, when I said I thought Josh would hate it,
I reduced this movie to guy makes bad decision, guy dies. And that wasn't fair to this movie because this movie is so much more than that. And Josh, what did you think?
I think this is an incredible movie. It's one of my favorite movies that I've watched in the past year or so. It's like Dark Rocky in a way.
Which they thought about having Stallone play this character at one point.
That would have worked just fine. But to, well, no, that's not true. I'll give Mickey Rooker a lot more credit than that now that I stop myself.
Because he, in a way, he's playing himself.
Yeah, yeah. I could see a little bit of Mickey Rourke in the character, of course. It, not just because physically you look at the man and it's like, wow, that was once impressive and it's been weathered by acid rain or something. Like the statue of Adonis up against the elements or something. But he's so well-liked by everyone that he meets, except for those that are supposed to be closest to him. And you get this sense of like, oh, how it's so much more tragic for a character to be like loved at a distance and not have any intimate, close relationships. And so feeling that there's this like void that developed within me watching it, like, oh, I hate it when humans don't have people. And this guy brings so much joy to third parties, and they've got collectible figures of him, and they're genuinely interested in meeting him, and then all of a sudden she's just grasping at straws, asking for a kid to play Nintendo with him, you know, begging for this stripper to spend time with him because he'd like to develop that interromantic relationship. But what is he going to do when he gets there? The movie tells us that he's going to probably do something that's self-destructive. He's going to miss the most important events, and then he's going to plead to get back into that situation. Harrowing to watch. What an incredible performance by Mickey Rourke. And I gotta say that the way that Aronofsky filmed it, where he follows Randy or Robin a lot in this movie from behind him, and you can kind of then become him and become that void that I spoke of. And there's a scene about halfway through the film where he is looking around at what appears to be a VFW. He's signing autographs. He's got the VHS tapes on the table, looking around the room and seeing the utter sadness and the falling asleep of people. And he's had his heart attack at this point, and he's recovering. And then in the next 5 minutes, you've got Marissa Tomei's character who's looking around at her situation, assessing the exact same thing, and you just yearn for these two characters to get past their circumstances and find a way to find each other through all of this mess. It's a powerful movie, and I'd like to elevate it past that point of being a movie about a bad decision guy. It's a movie about the human experience in a way. No matter who you are, be it in wrestling or something like that, this is something that can touch a lot of different people because of the circumstances they can be in. Evan Rachel Wood, normally I really wish, I'm not crazy about her as an actress, but she's got a very brief amount of time on screen here and makes a very large impression going through hating him, having that sprig of optimism, and then hating him again, and then resigning her fate. This has got a lot to offer to it, and I'm incredibly surprised at how much I liked it. Even up through like the smorgasbord of drugs offered to his character. I mean, that's insanity right there. He should have been dead far before this film existed, but go ahead.
Well, I mean, you say that, but you hear some of the stories of some of these guys that are still alive did. I mean, obviously, a lot of them are dead. But, I mean, he was stapling himself. He was having matches and barbed wire just to, because that was the only joy he could experience was somehow that crowd reacting, no matter how little or, you know, many there were.
Josh, CZW is a real thing. That is an actual federation where pretty much every match is some sort of extreme death match situation where, yeah, you know, the ring is wrapped in barbed wire and guys are breaking light bulbs over each other's heads.
Yeah, I figured that, actually, because in watching it in the same room, I hear, oh, why are they doing that? This guy's just stupid. And I'm, what I was trying to do was explain a different perspective, because I felt it. I'm no wrestler by any means, but and I'm no wrestling fan by any means, but I felt that scene. And I felt the movie in general is like, oh, no, wait. It's not just people making bad decisions. You've got to try and see how hard they're trying to be good and just failing at it. And how heartbreaking is it for characters like this to just continuously experience failure? It's sad on the highest level, something that Aronofsky does better than anyone. I mean, Requiem for a Dream practically put me in a depression coma for weeks, and I still haven't seen it since then.
There's a line that is just so... it's just so poignant and so sad because you know in your head this is never going to happen. He says to another wrestler that, hey, I hear the guys from the Fed are going to be in the building. Like, dude, you're never going back, man. It's never going to happen. You're not going back to WWE. It's not going to be you, man.
Yeah, it's I feel bad for reducing this movie to bad decision. Guy dies at the end. But because it's not that at all. And, you know, this movie could have been about drugs. It could have been about any situation where you want out, you try really hard to get out, and you just can't. I mean, A Star Is Born, you know, has a little bit of this in it. It's just a phenomenal movie. There's the scene where he's working at the grocery store and the guy recognizes him. I mean, can you imagine? I watched a TV show on Practical Jokers, and I also do podcasting, and they were making jokes about when they get canceled eventually, it's going to suck working at the mall and someone coming up, hey, aren't you the guy? And obviously they won't have that scenario most likely, but that would suck so bad. I mean, Jake the Snake Roberts is a perfect example. I mean, you probably even know that name. We've not.
Oh yeah, Resurrection of Jake the Snake was. It's on Prime right now, right. Available to watch. It was one of the selections that came up when I punched in the wrestler.
But that's just kind of one of those household names that people know, even if you're not wrestling fans. And you know, that's the kind of thing you got to deal with. Is you can't get work. So if you are going to get work, you're going to have to be in the public eye, and then people are going to recognize you. And there's just so many. There's so many layers to this movie that, and that's not even talking, I mean, Josh mentioned the Marissa Tomei stuff, but that's, you know, something else entirely on its own, and it's, I ended up loving this movie way more than I remember loving it initially, and you don't have to be a wrestling fan. That said, you know, as Josh was saying, it's easy to get out of this movie and kind of watch it from a distance and be like, people making bad decisions and not sympathizing with them.
The wrestling in the movie is authentic. That's amazing. He really can pull. He really pulls it off incredibly well. There's nothing about that. I mean, it's average. You know, it's like it kind of feels old school, like 80s style. But still,
that's what he was.
It's still, it's still very authentic to the professional wrestling that we watch. And these are not. I mean, he's professional, but. He's not professional, but Ernest Miller, the guy who was wrestling at the end, the Arab guy, the black Arab car salesman, he actually was a professional wrestler. He was kind of reached his big time peak in WCW in 2000. He was a real guy.
He reminded me, the character, at least, that he's portraying, the Ayatollah. I remember the Iron Sheik, and I follow the Iron Sheik on Twitter. And that's been a humorous, if not slightly dangerous, follow over time. But, I mean, wrestling has got kind of a moment with me right now. I see that Chris Hemsworth has been cast as Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan? That is bizarre.
No, it's not. It makes perfect sense. When you put the pictures next to each other, I can totally see it.
That is going to be one. That is going to be one ridiculously bad movie. they're gonna pretend he did nothing wrong in his entire life.
Well, they're not going to get that far. Right. I think it's going to be earlier on before that.
Yeah, but I guarantee you, he's not going to do steroids in the movie.
I don't know. It's Todd Phillips. They might. Anyway, you were making the point.
The scene where you have all of them pre-gaming in one very small, tight, tiny room, there's zero ego in that room, you know? And I just found that to be so precious. Like, this particular culture, that whatever way you want to look at it, you can't deny that that's a very strong possibility, that these guys are trying hard to make a living and to entertain people, and maybe on the side they're, you know, a bit chauvinistic, narcissistic, whatever, you know, because that's why they spend 9 hours a day ripping their bodies up like crazy and sticking it with needles. But in that room, they're like a group of brothers, you know. I found that to be very endearing. And if that's what that culture is about, and if fighting with your family is what that's kind of all about.
Simpler version of that, but yeah.
In the movie, this movie refers to the guys driving the Cadillacs are the ones that, you know, take care of all that. You can sense that there's a hierarchy, too, like a caste system when it comes to wrestling. And I loved all of those characters. And after the matches, they're like, hey, are you okay with this? Did I hurt you or anything like that? That's just... That's a wonderful, wonderful thing. Whether or not it's true,
well,
I'm
there
not
is
sure.
A podcast to listen to called Something to Wrestle With, and a guy, his name is Bruce Pritchard. He used to be the guy in charge of, like, him and Vince McMahon wrote a lot of the shows, and he had to deal with the behind the scenes stuff. And basically, it's essentially him retelling those stories you're talking about. And I've just been kind of, that's like the only podcast to listen to right now. I've been going back the last 3 years. Actually, I think I'm wearing something that I wrestle with shirt right now. I mentioned Ivy Envy losing all these awards. They lose to this podcast. It is fantastic. And I don't even really care about wrestling now as much. It's more of, they talk about the stuff when I was a kid and the behind the scenes and the guys that do have egos, the guys that didn't. It's just a really fantastic thing. And I mean, you mentioned the brotherhood and all that, but it's really not unlike anybody else. You have some guys that do steroids, some that have drug problems, some that are completely normal. You know, just like you have rock stars, some are normal, some are depressed, some are, you know. If you take it every career, I bet you the same percentages across the board, this percentage is depressed, this percentage does drugs, this one's got an alcohol problem. I bet that's probably the case. It's just you have a microphone.
Yeah, I worked with a guy in radio who did more drugs before his show than Randy the Ram was doing in this movie.
Right.
Good radio.
I mean, you just, when you're in the spotlight like that, you have a microscope on you, and it seems more, you know, you see all these rock stars killing themselves the last couple of years, and it's like, well, yeah, but how many people kill themselves? We just don't, they're not in the newspaper the next day.
Yeah, I guess, you know, for a sport or an entertainment culture and industry that is well known for being like fake, so to speak, or whatever, and that's its main drawback for people like me that were so offended at age 11 when I found out that it was fake, right? It came late to the game. But there's nothing fake about what they're showing there. And all of these guys, they're not doing it for their health. They're doing it for a love of what they're doing, pay because they have to, you know. There's no, like, if offered a life of steady income 9 to 5 Monday through Friday or whatever, I think most of them would probably opt for that. There's some like him that seem to, their particular drug of choice is attention and belonging and whatnot. So I had a point there. The whole point is that for as fake as the sport may seem, I really got a sense of affection and authenticity from the culture.
Yeah, I think they don't call it fake as much as they call it predetermined or fixed. I think, you know, it's basically, it's almost worse than UFC in a lot of ways because they're doing it every night. And the problem with UFC is, when your big star loses, now what happens? At least here you can keep people, you know, famous.
I find it strange that people have such a hard time with professional wrestling, yet you know, you go to a Broadway play. Because this is a performance just as much as anything else.
Oh, yeah.
It's a play that's happening. It just happens to be a physical one that has, you know, has outcomes. But, you know, movies have outcomes too, you know?
Well, it's even the cheesiness you see, you know, them doing their promos and whatnot. You know, look at Mick Jagger. If anybody but Mick Jagger does that, that's the stupidest thing you've ever seen in the world. But when Mick Jagger does it, it's cool because it's Mick Jagger. It's kind of the same thing. And even with this movie, they were going to bring Mickey Rourke in to do a wrestling match with Chris Jericho at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. Chris Jericho did such a good job. Like, Mickey Rourke thought Chris Jericho was trying to fight him, didn't realize it was all a work, as they say, and ended up bailing on the whole thing because Chris Jericho convinced he acted so good that Mickey Rourke was convinced that it was real. So it never happened. But I don't know. Beyond that, it really is a fantastic movie that I really think people would like, even if you're not a wrestling fan, because I think with those drug movies, when it's strictly about drugs and someone trying to get out of there, sometimes it's easier to be like, well, just stop. It's not that, you know, it's harder to sympathize with that person. I think this movie makes it easier to sympathize with that type of person than other movies similar, and I think Aronofsky is a big reason for that, and Mickey Rourke being so convincing. And it just makes me feel bad that I reduced it to the level of a bad movie like this.
You're trying to anticipate Josh, and you didn't realize you couldn't this time.
Well, it wasn't so much me. It was more me misrepresenting this movie. You know, I'm putting it on. I was, you know, Everest. I mean, if Everest was a better movie, maybe you can understand why they're there. You know, that's
yeah.
You know, he had to be here. He needs to. Like, he wouldn't do a night. He didn't want to do a 9-to-5 job. He has to be in the ring. He needs that. That's what his true love is. And they really captured that in this movie. Clearly in Everest, they didn't capture that. You know, maybe let Aronofsky direct an Everest movie and we'll see what happens.
What'd you think?
He basically did.
Not to keep this going, because I know we're kind of wrapping up, but what did you think of the Todd Barry character, the grocery store manager?
Oh, piece of shit.
they're out there.
Of course,
that was kind of their response to people who call it fake or don't like it.
The scene where he hurts himself, you know,
on purpose
or whatnot.
You
know, he gets out of the store that way. I was just waiting for the moment where he snapped on him and somehow hurt him or something like that. And I mean, I found myself wondering, oh, why do I wish for bloodlust of this man? but he's a terrible human being.
But we all know those people.
Oh God. Yeah. They're everywhere.
I cut my finger in a beef slicer once at Hardee's.
Oh, really? Oh God.
I was cleaning it though. I wasn't going. So I just kind of ran into it. It was my guitar playing hand too. So I had to I don't know. I'd like Tony Iommi it and put something on top of my fingers because he got the tips of his fingers cut off. I don't know if anybody knew that story.
Who did?
The Tony Iommi from Black Sabbath. So he has to put things on the tips of his fingers to play. So I had to do something like that. But yeah, it hurt really bad.
Yeah, I believe you. In this movie, at one point, Mickey Rourke's character gets sprayed in the face with, I couldn't tell exactly what it was, maybe bug spray. Something like that, but a work story. At work one time, coil blaster, the stuff that cleans off coils of dust and all the grime and stuff that builds up. I had the needle or the nozzle pointed the wrong way, and it went back into my face. And so as soon as he was like, I'm like, I remember that. That was the worst pain I've ever felt. And thought I was for sure blind.
Anything else on the wrestler or wrestling in general?
I love how you talk about the cooperation and the love between these guys when he's banging him in the head with
yes.
It's the same scene as in Fighting With My Family where he's hitting him in the head with the garbage can.
But that's
that is a universal wrestling story, as guys talking about, all right, well, would you be willing to take this? And I'm reminded of all the hardcore matches that I've watched over the years where, Al Snow is wrestling Bob Holly in 2-degree weather outside and gets thrown in the Mississippi River. That is freaking insane.
Well, they had remember when Macho Man got bit by Jake Roberts' snake?
Yeah.
They pitched an idea to Macho Man, and he thought for sure, why would, that they were trying to kill him. So he made the snake bite Jake first. So backstage, Jake let it bite him. And then they took it off. But when they got into the ring, Jake couldn't get it off of Macho Man. But, I mean, it's – I don't know. The stuff they do for the crowd is pretty insane.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know.
They'll reach moments, man. Like in professional wrestling, sometimes they can reach a moment that is just amazing. Like if you give Beyond the Mat a chance.
Yeah.
I mean.
Because that's the when I said there's different characters. Mick Foley could have very easily been this guy.
Yeah.
And there is a scene where him and the or a whole. They basically take up like four guys and they show their career. But Mick Foley, he's on this road. He didn't really do drugs, oddly enough. But. He had to do things. He needed to do it. Then all of a sudden, they show his family watching one of his matches, and it just, you know, the light bulb went off, and he never did it like that again.
Hmm. Is he the guy, black hair, mustache?
Beard.
Mick Foley?
You'd probably reckon. He's out there a lot. He's kind of slightly.
Kind of looks like the OxyClean guy a little bit.
No.
Kind of looks like Santa Claus.
He's kind of more of a Muppet-looking guy. Kind of looks like Animal from the Muppets.
I think I know who it is that you're talking about.
He's slightly more famous in wrestling. He's kind of more main, not kind of low level of mainstream success, I guess. But
I tell you what, though, I mean, there is one of the great pieces of drama I've ever seen, and I'm talking ever seen. He got thrown off the top of a 20-foot high steel cage through a table, and they're wheeling him off on a stretcher. And he jumps off the stretcher, runs back to the cage, climbs up on top of it again.
And falls through it.
Goes through it. Continues the match.
Comes back out an hour later from the next match.
Yeah. I mean.
Tooth falls out of his mouth, is stuck in his nose.
They've got announcers, you know. They've got these announcers who are announcing the action. And there's this guy, Jim Ross, who's just this incredible orator. He just knows how to build a piece of drama. And when Mick goes off the top of the cage the first time, they killed him. Like, it's so amazing. He sells it like incredibly. I mean, it's just amazing drama.
Yeah, and even when they don't like each other, they still when they go into the ring, they still have this respect for each other, and they take care of each other more or less. It's just, I don't know, I find the whole thing fascinating, and that's where my fandom comes in, and just kind of all the behind-the-scenes stuff that go along with it, plus now that, like, the main guy right now is from Davenport. That's kind of fun, too. Anyway.
Since this is Aunt Bethany's 80th Christmas, I think she should lead us in the saying of grace.
What, dear?
Grace! She passed away 30 years ago.
1989.
There's two movies in 1989 I didn't watch either.
We butchered them last week. We called one a Cheech and Chong movie called High Hopes, which
is not. I kind of wish it was, because that might have been like, hey, let me watch the Cheech and Chong movie, because I still haven't seen one. But no, High Hopes is a Mike Lee movie. Now, I've seen a Mike Lee movie before, and I was the only person in the theater in college when we used to have an independent film series. It was in 2002 called All or Nothing. And, okay, it's not bad or anything, but it's just, like, so simple and dreary and just a slice of life of a particular downtrodden family in England. Oh, wait, so's this one. It seems like that's what this guy pretty much does. The description of it literally is the life of a working class couple living in London and their complicated relationships with other members of the family. That sounds exactly like All or Nothing from 2002, but I think that's pretty much what Mike Lee does. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Okay. The other one, I got excited when I thought that Michael Dudikoff was
on the
going
podcast.
To be in
it. He got excited last year. He's describing it.
But then once you guys took me down a notch, it's just this guy named David Bradley who's in it. American Ninja 3. Blood Hunt. All right, so we watched American Ninja, I think, back in 1985, so 2015, something like that. And I was taken by how gloriously bad it was. Golan and Globus, Michael Dudikoff, the whole nine yards, right? And just the most asinine thing that you would ever see on screen. It was definitely like a, you know, like when you see a master filmmaker's first movie, like M. Night Shyamalan gave us his home movie one time as a special feature. I think it was on The Sixth Sense or Signs. And I was like, oh, I can see kind of what he was going for here, but it's clearly made by a child. Well, so is American Ninja. It was made by a child, okay? I can't imagine that the third one will be any better.
It would be kind of cool if it was.
What's it about a name like David Bradley where you just don't hear any star power in that name?
Yeah.
Like Michael Dudikoff, like, kind of sounds like a guy. Like, it sounds like he could be somebody.
Well, it's a last name you've never heard before. Yeah.
David Bradley is just
guy with two first names.
That's the guy that we talked about being in another movie a while back. He's the dad in Terminator 3, right? He's Claire Danes' dad in Terminator 3.
Why would anybody know who David Bradley is?
Because that name is just ringing a bell, man. He looks like your neighbor.
I hope to God he played Ben Mendelsohn's dad in some way.
Jesus Christ. He might be onto something. Speaking of Ben Mendelsohn, while he's looking... the initial reviews of Captain Marvel are in, and the one constant of all of the reviews, all 13 little blurbs that I read.
Nothing to do with Ben Mendelsohn.
Okay, well, that's too bad. But the one constant was that Ben Mendelsohn was great. Not good, great. Steals the movie, I saw a number of times. Just saying.
Ask somebody down the street if they know who he is.
They will. I give them a flyer.
If he's true, then in a month we might. He's in a Harry Potter movie.
That's good. Does he have a website? Can we get him on the show?
He's in Captain America: The First Avenger.
Really? Oh, good for him.
Wait. If he's an American guy, it's the guy I'm thinking of. If he's from England, then it's not the same dude.
He looks very familiar. He's in Hot Fuzz, Harry Potter, and the...
No, that's not him.
Is that not David Bradley?
No, that's the groundskeeper from the Harry Potter series. The one with the cat named Mrs. Filch. Or Mrs. Norris. His name is Mr. Filch in the Harry Potter series. Yeah, that's David Bradley. He's in Game of Thrones as well. So
American Ninja 3?
Yeah, apparently he's the lead. At least he's the first listed name. I don't know what that guy would be doing leading that movie, but I also don't care. None of us should care about American Ninja.
There's two David Bradleys?
Yeah, he looks more like Eli Roth. He's an American Ninja 4, American Samurai.
He's got a niche.
And he hasn't worked since 97.
Oh. So he probably is my neighbor.
He could very well be. He could be underground wrestling for all we know.
I'm going to see if he's dead so we can feel bad about it.
Classic Bob.
He is not. All right, but that is 89. Next week, he went through them and they've already left my mind.
Yeah, Lean on Me is one of them.
It's kind of the biggest one, I think.
Exactly. New York Stories, Woody Allen, Scorsese / Coppola film. Dream a Little Dream is the one that I know for sure I'm going to be watching. It's on its way from Amazon. It's one of my wife's favorite movies of the 80s that I've never seen. So she's been pretty on when it comes to movies that she's wanted to show me. There was one from 87, something about heaven, Made in Heaven, with Timothy Hutton and somebody else that I really did enjoy. So I'll trust her judgment again.
It is a Corey movie.
Yeah, Corey Feldman's in it.
The second biggest movie, though, was Skin Deep. The John Ritter movie.
Oh, the John Ritter in a beard and a salacious movie with lots of skin, I would imagine. Imagine by the title that it would be sexy.
Hey, it made $20 million, and I think Lean on Me only made $30 million, so...
There you go.
If you can watch Skin Deep, I do recommend you see it.
I'll give it a shot. Blake Edwards' stuff in the past has been a little too tawdry and weird for my taste.
It's just so strange that it's just something that people should see.
Next week, we've got Greta, Chloe Grace Moretz movie as a stalker movie, and Tyler Perry's A Madea Family Funeral. And then something else comes out. I don't know what it would be, but I'm sure something could come out. I got to quit hitting that cord. Our classic will be...
Siri not available.
Sorry.
A classic is Cape Fear, with New York Stories being Woody Allen, Coppola, and Scorsese, and then this Greta movie being about stalkers. Cape Fear is a stalking movie. Josh mentioned we could watch both of them if we wanted to, but either way, whatever you guys want to do, listening.
I haven't seen the original before. I think it was a Gregory Peck in the Robert De Niro role, or Robert Urich, something like that. It's a dude that I knew the name of for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the Simpsons version of the remake. You don't remember that one?
Oh, yeah. Of course, with the... Yeah.
Are you still trying to think about who played who in the original?
Well, I thought it was Robert Mitchum, but I'm not
sure. Robert Mitchum, you're right. It is. Gregory Peck. No, you can't have Atticus Finch be a stalker.
He was a dad.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what we're doing next week. Before I let you go, I want to thank our Patreon supporters. I don't have their names in front of me, so I'm going to do this off the top of my head and hope I don't screw up. At our key grip level, we have the Hall of Famer Jason Bryant and Charlie Messing. At our character actor level, we have Christina Cato, Cousin Jeff's, and the David Bradley of Patreon supporters, Josh Paul.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Kind of the same thing, isn't it?
Your neighbor.
Well, you know, it's two first names, kind of.
Oh, okay.
There's really no star power behind either one of them. I'm pretty sure he doesn't even listen to the show, forgot he's even donating.
But a valued member of the community as a local law enforcement agent.
Yes. Our special effects level, Corey from IVNV, and I don't have it in front of me, Josh, you know.
Sarah Morrell.
Yes.
May the force be with you.
Our associate producer, Jason from New Mexico.
Everybody has to eat shaving cream once in a while.
And our movie stars, Dave Sievers and Uncle Jeff.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
If you want to be a Patreon supporter, head over to ihatecritics.net/Patreon to get yourself a credit on the show. There's also a PayPal link. You can still get a credit if you do that as well. The podcast merch, ihatecritics.net/don't-know-what, but click on the podcast merch tab and that'll take you to TeePublic and where our show pages. We have 3 shirts, pillows, whatever you want. 3 different designs you can put on bags, whatever. Otherwise, that's our show. We'll see you next week.
That ought to do it. Thanks very much, Ray.
And we're the 3 best friends that anybody could have. We're the 3 best friends that anyone could have. We're the 3 best friends that anyone can have. And we'll never, ever, 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 ever leave each other. We're the best 3 friends that anybody could have. I mean the 3 best friends that anybody could have. That's right, the 3 best friends that anyone
could have. You guys want to run the wrestler through it?
Oh, sure. Hey, could you put the logo on a set of glow-in-the-dark condoms?
Not through TeePublic. Okay. Okay. But, I mean, if I can find a custom condom place, glow-in-the-dark condom place, yeah.
Everyone's a critic, saving people day in, day out. From boredom.
That'd be perfect.
And from disease.
Or from everyone's a critic, and you put it on a small dick.
Wow.
Either way.
Yeah.
Wrestler or identity?
Wrestler.
Wrestler.
I agree. The wrestler or American Pie?
Wrestler.
The wrestler.
The wrestler or Pan's Labyrinth?
Recency bias, the wrestler.
Yeah, I would agree. Recency bias.
Yeah, good for different reasons. The wrestler or Knocked Up?
Because I'd rather watch Knocked Up. The wrestler.
Agreed?
Yeah, it's not as close for me. It's the wrestler. I mean, I like Knocked Up a lot. Goodfellas, the wrestler.
I guess it would have to be recency bias again and the wrestler.
Agreed.
I'm kind of feeling the same way. This one might win. The Wrestler or Wall-E?
Wall-E.
Yeah, Wall-E.
If I went Wrestler, it'd be recency bias, but I don't have to choose, so. The Wrestler or Something About Mary?
The Wrestler.
Wrestler.
The Wrestler or Memento?
Memento.
I'll go The Wrestler.
I'll go The Wrestler as well. The Wrestler or The Lion King?
The Wrestler.
Lion King.
I'm going to go The Wrestler. Why are we facing Wall-E again? Number 17 movie, or 17th most favorite movie of all time.
Wow.
Behind Wall-E, Donnie Darko, Star Wars. What the fuck?
Oh, go ahead and run Star Wars through. Is it episode 4 of New Hope, sir?
Really?
You want to do that?
We can do it right now.
I would rather it be in its honest position than, you know, faking it in the teens.
The fair point is that at some point I'm going to have to choose Star Wars or something.
Sure.
So even if it drops down, you're at least going
to
get
the... You're
going
to have to say the words. Say the words, Bob.
Star Wars Identity.
Star Wars.
Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope.
What is Identity again?
John Cusack, James Mangold movie about Prue Taylor Vince having multiple personalities, but then...
The personalities twist. Don't know they're real.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw that movie. I'll go Identity. Star Wars, American Pie.
Star Wars.
Star Wars.
American Pie. I'm being honest. I really,
yeah, no,
not,
that's what,
I'm
that's what we want.
Asshole. Star Wars, Pan's Labyrinth.
Pan's Labyrinth.
A New Hope.
Pan's Labyrinth. Recency bias, of course. A New Hope, My Cousin Vinny.
Star Wars.
A New Hope. Now, I'm glad this movie came up. You go ahead and choose.
Well, it's My Cousin, Cousin Vinny.
Because with Marissa Tomei and The Wrestler, I was thinking to myself, everything's coming up Bob this week. Because not only is there news about a Hulk Hogan movie, we're watching The Wrestler, Fighting With My Family comes out. I watch School of Rock, and amongst all of us, he's been encouraging me to watch it more, etc. So although you guys are together on the wrestling thing, there's that little extra thing. And then I was thinking the Marissa Tomei angle. I'm like, this is like fitting all of his favorite things into one, because, I mean, he really likes Marissa Tomei in that movie. And
totally forgot about the 80s rock music that was playing throughout the
there was that. And then, you know, I didn't realize how bold a performance that she would have made, you know, and then she does. It's the most convincing stripper I've ever seen on screen. So all around, everything came up Bob this week.
I'm surprised I haven't had to pick Star Wars yet. Star Wars, The Big Fish.
Star Wars.
Star Wars.
Go Big Fish. Star Wars, Planet of the Apes.
The original?
Yeah.
Star Wars.
A New Hope.
Planet of the Apes. Star Wars, Dead Poet Society.
Ooh, that's tough. Dead Poet Society.
Star Wars. This game is rigged.
Dead Poet Society. Star Wars. Die Hard.
Die Hard.
Star Wars.
Die Hard. Finally, you're going to get one, Josh. Star Wars. The Shawshank Redemption.
Star Wars.
Star Wars. The Shawshank Redemption.
Star Wars.
Oh, I was hoping me and Sean were going to do Star Wars and you do Shawshank.
If you see my list, Shawshank is
I
on
know,
it.
I know, I've seen it, but yeah. I thought it was higher. Star Wars or The Visit, the M. Night movie.
Oh, Star Wars.
Star Wars?
It's The Visit. Congratulations, Star Wars is now 140 between Die Hard and The Visit.
Fair.
Wow. Huh.
What is it? Picked it once. Yeah. But of the Star Wars movies, which one did you like the most again? Was it The Last Jedi?
It may be recency bias. I'd say it's Last Jedi. I did that one weird one that came out after...
Rogue One?
Yeah, Rogue One I liked okay. And then Empire, I guess, would be the other obvious one.
Yeah, if anyone... I love the original trilogy, of course, but if anyone wanted to challenge me on Return of the Jedi, that's when I'm going to try and convince you on every single one. That's the highest on the list.
Yeah, that's... I don't know. I'll never be able to escape the way Clerks described that movie, so...
I hate Ewoks.
But when you see Clerks before Return, it's hard to...
Oh, yeah, you're screwed for life. It's not going to happen for you, but it got so much worse when they changed the song in the special edition to, like, something that's even cheesier somehow than their own song that they had.
And I've only seen the special edition, so...
Yeah, yeah, and we never want to introduce you to the Ewok movies.
I believe I watched those as kids. I just don't really remember them at all.
Man, Caravan of Courage and the other one, Battle for Endor.
Yeah, yeah. They really actually make Jedi so much worse. it makes me kind of hate it a little bit.
Those are really bad. Wilford Brimley taking a break from making oatmeal commercials to yell at kids on another planet for once.
And the way Chris Jericho, he always talks about, he talks about Star Wars fans and wrestling fans as the same people. They hate the thing they love and they do nothing but bitch about it, but it's their favorite thing in the whole world.
No, I love it after I'm going through like the nth number of
but the stereotypical
or whatever, I'm like, this movie is really shitty. Nah, but that's a cool thing. Yeah, I still love
it. But the stereotypical fan.
George Lucas and Vince McMahon have a lot in common.
Vince McMahon didn't give it away. He's going to die. But that's another, I don't know, Something the Wrestle is such a good podcast that it's hard to not having seen the, you know, watched it as much. I mean, I'm sure you've seen something here or there, but not
absolutely
being completely familiar with some of the stuff. It's, you miss out, but it's such a good, it's kind of like The Doubt, but for wrestling. He does all the voices really, really well. It's a fantastic show, and it beat Ivy Envy a lot. And I feel bad because it's my friend losing to them, but it really is a good show.
Josh, you really should watch Beyond the Mat. I'm telling you, it's pretty amazing.
I think if you're going to catch me doing it, it would be this week.
It is on Amazon.
It is.
You got to pay for it, but it's on there. So is The Wrestler 1974.
Yeah, don't watch that.